Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spear.
And away we go on this Tuesday, June the 16th, 2020, 6:16:20, 18 minutes past the hour here on this Tuesday morning. And as we do each and every Tuesday morning here on the program, we spend a few minutes kicking off the program with the Marion Public Health Commissioner, Tracy Kinsler. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Beautiful weather, a little warmer than it was yesterday.
Yeah, it feels good outside.
It does. It's a nice morning. Tracy, this week I got asked a lot of questions in the past 7 days, so I thought we'd start off by talking about a few of these questions I've been asked. There seems to be, here in Marion County, a lot of reporting of low numbers, new cases being detected. At least that's the narrative being put out on social media and in the news. What is going on in Marion County right now?
This week we have seen a drop in our cases. We've only had a handful of new cases. Over the weekend we didn't have any new cases. And so that trend has continued. We kind of started last week and it has continued. So we've only had kind of a handful of cases. So we are definitely plateaued. And headed down with our case count, which is great news. We're starting to see people from the past who were positives, who were contacts of positives that had to be quarantined are starting to fall off. Their time has run out, so we're kind of in a lull right now.
With more things opening up, restaurants obviously opening up not too long ago, and certainly more people being out on the roads. I was talking to somebody yesterday about how the traffic has almost picked up to where it was pre-quarantine. Why would we now be having less cases?
It takes 2 or 3 weeks for things to start to catch up. So we haven't seen the effects of starting to open things up yet. So what we're seeing right now with this drop is actually the prison outbreak and nursing homes outbreaks and things like that are playing themselves out. So that's where the majority of our cases were, and that has played itself out. Those people are recovered, so we're down in a lull right now, kind of a valley. Now that stuff is starting to open up, to me, I think it might actually end up being more like mid-July before we start to see what's going to happen with all the opening, because the really big places haven't opened yet, like Cedar Point, Kings Island, those places where people are coming from everywhere and gathering real close together and then going back home to their hometown. So I think it could be a while before we start to see that trend go up.
Do you think there is a fear? Because how I see this being portrayed is that we quarantined when we thought things were awful, and now here we are unquarantining, and there's more traffic, there are more things open, and cases are going down, so it all must have been a hoax, it all must have been a joke. That seems to be the narrative out there. Is there a fear of that?
Yes, and there always is in public health. We live on a double-edged sword in public health because our main priority is preventing things from happening. And when you do a good job at prevention, people think there must not have been a problem to begin with. And that's what we did here in Ohio. We did a great job of preventing everybody from catching coronavirus all at once. And that was the main purpose, was let's all stay home, give ourselves a chance to build infrastructure that's going to help us with this this disease. So give our workplaces a chance to install barriers. Give our country a chance, and our state and our and Marion a chance to build up our supplies of PPE. It was all designed to kick the can down the road, so that we would have better systems in place at the hospital, at the morgues, everywhere. And so that's what we did. And so now, you know, we prepare for the second wave. And all we can do is look at history and look at what's happening in other countries to know that typically we have a second wave. And so sometimes the virus might lay dormant for a little while, and then it resurges, it's mutated, it's even stronger, or it's presenting with different symptoms or whatever. So that's kind of where we are. But, yeah, it is a concern that people think it wasn't real, just because we did such a good job at prevention.
A question I have heard from a lot of business owners, because all of the protests and riots have temporarily pushed COVID-19 off the front page of the papers and front stories of the news broadcast. Right now, in Marion, Ohio, for the people who might be listening, who own businesses, is it? I know it's recommended, but is it a rule that employees have to wear masks in restaurants, in department stores, in those places? Could they be fined? What is exactly the hard and fast rule on this?
The rule is that they have to wear masks. So all employees are required to wear masks at work. If you can't social distance, so if you're in an office environment and you have your own office, you don't have to wear a mask while you're sitting in your own office by yourself. But so department stores, restaurants, employees are supposed to be wearing masks. That's the rule in the governor's order. He does lay out 7 different exceptions. So if you have a medical problem, if whatever's going on in your business, the heat is so high that it creates a medical problem to have your mask on, things like that, there are exceptions. And if the business feels like they fall under an exception, they just need to have a written thing. And then that way, if we get complaints, we can say, you know, why aren't you wearing masks? And they can say, this is the exception we fall under and our reasoning for it. And we say, okay. But if you're not wearing your mask in your workplace, if we get a complaint about it, which we typically would, then we come out and have a visit and just do education that you need to be wearing your masks. We issue a notice of violation of the governor's order. And then if we get called back out again, that's when we kind of, you know, help get the prosecutor's office involved to say, what should we do about this? They're clearly not complying and have no intention of complying, and we kind of take that path.
So if you cannot social distance, which I would imagine most restaurants cannot, unless there is some underlying circumstance, employees are mandated to wear masks.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because I think that's been a big question. Another question is, it's interesting because we live in a community and word travels, and a lot of it is sometimes true and sometimes just rumor. But have there been any major fines? Have there been cases that have been turned over to the prosecutor's office? Have there been big issues in regard to restaurants or bars not complying with the governor's order?
No, we haven't turned anybody over to the prosecutor's office. So far, we've been able to work with people, explain the rules, figure out if they do qualify for one of the exemptions, and kind of, you know, work it out amongst ourselves, which is the way we like to do it. We don't like to be a heavy-handed enforcer. We want to educate and partner. So we haven't turned anybody over to the prosecutor's office. You know, if we would get continued complaints about a place, that's when we would kind of do that. But right now, we're getting complaints, but we're not getting complaints about the same places over and over and over.
A lot of questions have been out there because of the protest, which I believe now have gone on for several weeks here in Marion, I believe 3. Is this a worry? I know a lot of people are wearing masks, but a lot of people seem to be showing up to these protests. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of social distancing. I saw a picture, I believe it was in the Marion Star yesterday or the day before, where all these young kids are lined up listening to a speech, and they certainly were not 6 feet apart, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a concern. I wish they would wear their masks, because that mask is really our best protection against this virus, you know, if we want to continue to, you know, be out and living our lives and things like that. So the masks are going to be the most important part. So it is, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if we get more positive cases that we can trace back to the protest. But it's definitely weighs on our minds that that's going to happen.
Summer comes on Sunday. Warmer temperatures, you wouldn't know it from this past weekend, but warmer temperatures have come than certainly in March, April, and May. Do we know if this is going to affect this virus in a positive way, negative way, or not at all?
So far, in places where it's already, you know, they have sustained higher temperatures, it hasn't made any impact. Early on, they were hoping that it would mimic the flu, and the flu tends to dissipate during hot temperatures, but worldwide it has not proven to do that, so I wouldn't expect it, you know, I would not expect that to happen.
Two things we've kept a close eye on here in Marion, and you alluded to them earlier on, were certainly the prisons. The Heartland story was a long-term story. And then somebody the other day said there were some other nursing homes affected. What is the story as far as prisons and nursing homes go in Marion at this point?
We did have the outbreak at Heartland. That is starting to play itself out, so people are recovering there. They haven't had any new cases. We had one case at Marion Point. They immediately tested everybody in the facility. Nobody else came back positive, so that didn't actually reach the level of an outbreak. You have to have two to be considered an outbreak. And those are the only two nursing homes that we've had cases at. The prison, we are starting to see they've kind of gone back to business as normal there. We get a case trickle in every so often, you know, maybe one or two a week from Marion Correctional or from North Central. The interesting thing that they have going on there now is that they have been doing antibody testing to see, you know, the people who never got it or the people who were asymptomatic, you know, did they have the virus in them already? So we get positive, they consider them probable from having an antibody test. So they've done over 100 of those. And now we're starting to see them retest people every so often to see if they're still positive or not. And sometimes they are still positive. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on over at the prison as they try to figure out what actually happened in their facility at Marion Correctional. That kind of information trickles in.
A lot of people are curious, because in the beginning we heard a lot about Marion General Hospital and them getting ready with the PPE and trying to get respirators on hand. How have things been over at Marion General? Have a lot of people been referred because of COVID to the hospital? Have a lot of people been hospitalized? We haven't talked about that in quite a while.
Yeah, they haven't had too many hospitalizations or COVID cases lately. There for a while we were seeing people being hospitalized. They might have been hospitalized for a day or two and then released. Certainly their cases picked up tremendously when we had the Heartland outbreak. People were being hospitalized for that, so they saw some increased cases there. And then they still get cases from the surrounding areas. So, you know, another county close by, if they have an outbreak at a nursing home or whatever, they're coming to Marion General that way. But so they have had cases, but they have not been overwhelmed with cases.
It's been interesting to watch this thing play out for nearly 3 months now, and we know people have died at Heartland. We certainly know there were deaths associated with the prison. But outside of the one death that we heard about as the first death in Marion that was not related to a nursing home or not related to a prison, have there been any other deaths in Marion that were not related to a nursing home or a prison?
Nope, that's it. Just the one death there early on, and the rest have been prison and nursing home deaths.
What do we attribute that to?
I think that's a good question, because early on, we, for planning purposes, we were saying, ODH was saying, to plan for 2 to 5% of the cases to die. And that certainly has not played out, and it hasn't played out across the state. So I think what, you know, you have to plan high so that you're ready for whatever happens. So, you know, in the beginning we were just using planning numbers because we didn't have anything to go by. And so I think, you know, there's a lot more people with mild symptoms or asymptomatic than we thought. But then there's also been a lot more people than we considered that are having pretty severe symptoms but don't actually pass away. And so their lives might be changed forever, but they didn't pass away. And, you know, that's because they got medical treatment and, you know, they were able to survive the virus. But now they have permanent damage to their lungs. They have memory loss. They have a seizure disorder now. They have blood clots that they have to treat. So there's a lot of stuff that happens that, it didn't actually kill people. Whereas when you look at someplace like the nursing home, when you have that elderly population, they were not able to, hospital treatments didn't help them because of their age, because of their chronic health conditions or whatever. So in the majority of people, they're either having mild symptoms or they're having very severe symptoms, but they're not actually passing away.
A lot of people don't talk about anything that this disease can cause short of death. Why do you think that gets lost in the shuffle?
I think people are really focused on numbers. They're very interested in the numbers. And it's really hard to tell a story through the numbers. And then the other part of that is you have patient privacy. And so it's, you know, it's hard as a health department worker to be able to tell you stories of people that we've had for fear of violating their privacy. And so I kind of think it's both of those things. And when you're in the thick of it, you know, and dealing with all of your cases at once, it's really hard to stop and say, let me see if I can talk to the family and see if I can share their story and things like that. So it's just, you know, caught up in the moment of it. But I kind of think it's all of those factors. And I think we need to do a better job sharing those stories so that people understand, you know, just because you don't die doesn't mean you don't suffer tremendously.
Last week was a big week. We saw the, I guess we would say, resignation of Dr. Acton, who has been a major figure in this. Some people call her a hero. Some people can't stand her. What did you make of her resignation amidst this COVID-19 pandemic?
It was certainly a surprise. I did not know that it was coming. Although we kind of, you know, in hindsight had a little bit of an idea something was going on because she hadn't been at press conferences lately from the governor. But, you know, I feel disappointed by it because she was such an advocate pre-pandemic of public health and of modernizing our systems and of, you know, doing some really good work, and we were all very excited to kind of go on that journey. There was a lot of stuff she was talking about that would have applied directly to Marion, like her lead paint initiatives. We do have lead in Marion that affects our kids, and so I was excited, you know, that she was going to be leading the ship or steering the ship, and you know, I understand with the pandemic that she became sort of the face of it, and it made people, you know, either love her or hate her, and I think that's unfortunate because she did have a lot to offer.
I don't think any of us really know at this point, but do you think had there not been this pandemic or had there not been this negative reaction toward her, that she would have continued on in this position?
I would like to think so. I don't know, you know, at all. But I would like to think that she would have. She seemed very interested in helping us at the local level improve public health. And so, you know, she had a lot of ideas and goals and things like that that we were all very supportive of. So I'd like to think, you know, that this probably changed things for her. And I can't imagine what it would be like to have a security detail with me all the time and be afraid like that all the time. So, you know, it's understandable.
And Tracy, one of the final questions today, I think, is something we don't talk about all the time, but we should go back and talk about every so often. Today, as of today, June of 2020, if you are going to go out in public, what is the best way to avoid this?
Wear your mask. If we all wear our masks, our chances of actually catching it from one another while we're out in public falls to only 1 or 2%. But it only works if we have our masks on. And then the other thing is to practice good hand hygiene. And then if you don't feel good, just stay home.
And hopefully everybody's understanding with that as far as employers go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tracy, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and we'll do it again next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tracy Kinsler, Marion Public Health Commissioner. Interesting stuff there, because I know there has been a lot of question as of late about what restaurants and businesses are supposed to do. So now you know. If you cannot stay 6 feet apart from somebody, then you do have to wear the mask. And I would guess in all restaurant situations and in a lot of department store situations, that would certainly be the case. And I hopefully, you know, I have heard these rumors running rampant that bars or restaurants were being fined. They were being reprimanded, so on and so forth. And now we know that really, in Marion, I guess that has not happened. That nothing has been turned over to the prosecutor's office, that nobody has received a fine, and that the most that has happened at this point is the health department has come in, checked up on a complaint, and asked, maybe educated them and asked them to continue on a different path. So hopefully we've cleared up a lot here this morning on the program, which is what we aim to do, educate and inform every morning. 40 minutes past the hour on this Tuesday, June the 16th, 2020. Phone lines are open if you have anything to add to that. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Do you have anything to add to the information given to us by Marion Public Health Commissioner Tracy Kinsler this morning? Phone lines are open. Now, we really haven't talked a whole lot about this because of the sixth anniversary that we had last week here, which kept us pretty busy. But the resignation of Dr. Acton, which we probably all know now, really had nothing to do with her wanting to leave. Now, again, it's all speculation. Maybe she did want to leave because of what was going on. But isn't it interesting how when people turn so negative up towards you, or people get that angry with you that you either have to leave your position or you're asked to leave your position, which we really don't know what happened. And it still baffles me to a certain degree, because I don't think, clearly Governor DeWine depended on her, and he said so much, and he has offered her a consulting position, but I don't know exactly why the public sentiment turned so negative against her. I can understand you would not like some of the decisions maybe that she was making, but I guarantee that when these press conferences were happening, she had told the governor everything she was going to do, and I'm sure other people involved. It's not just her and the governor sitting in a room in the morning. There were a lot of legislatures sitting there. There were a lot of people involved with the governor and the doctor who would have been sitting there, who could have objected or overruled anything that was going on. So it's still kind of fascinating to me. I don't know if it's because she became the face of the pandemic and was giving the information on what she thought should happen, But how she got all of the anger that people had, I really don't understand, because I've heard people praise the governor and then in the same sentence go after her. And I don't really, you know, every conference that I saw, they were working pretty much together. I have never heard Governor DeWine criticize her. Never. Never have heard Governor DeWine say a negative word. And up until the point to where she resigned and he gave her a special position as advisor. So I certainly don't think he has any problem with the job that she is doing. It certainly would not appear that way. But yet he is not getting the criticism that she got. And I'm not sure why that really baffles me to a certain extent. And again, I understand that people disagree with a lot of the decisions that were made and a lot of the decisions that continue to be made. But I don't know why so much anger got directed toward her. And I don't know her. I have no dog in that fight. It just baffles me because I know the governor had to go along with everything she was saying or it wouldn't have happened. But if you have an opinion, let me know. I'd love to know people's thoughts on that, because that, to me, is one of the biggest stories to come out of this COVID thing. Oh, and I've got to mention this. This is kind of funny to me in a way. By the way, phone lines are open. Feel free to interrupt me at any point. 740-383-9944. I believe it was yesterday. The Marion Star did a story on Dr. Acton leaving her position. And here's why it was funny to me. I forget what the headline was, but it was a fairly big headline. And they called her an icon. Now, here we go with this icon word again. I don't know if, and I don't think this was a local story, so I'm not saying it was written by anybody locally here in Marion. As a matter of fact, I don't think it was a local story. I think it was a Columbus story. But what is this fascination we have with the word icon? I'm not even sure exactly what icon means. And I certainly would not think that Dr. Acton, for all the good or bad, depending on which side you're on, that she has done, would consider her an icon. I think she's a well-known person because of this. I think she's loved by many, hated by some. I think she's a controversial figure. I think she's a well-known personality. But I don't know. This icon word is starting to appear everywhere. I don't know if people writing articles just don't have an extensive vocabulary that we can't get past the word icon. But icons to me are people who have been around a really, really long time and have done tremendous good. Like Mother Teresa. Now there's an icon. Or Gandhi. Now, there's an icon. But I don't know about some of these other people who are being labeled as icons. Seems a little strange to me. I don't know why that word keeps popping up. But to each their own, maybe that's just a pet peeve of mine. It's a pet peeve like people using the word literally. Have I ever talked about this on the air? That is one of my biggest pet peeves. I think as an English major, it drives me insane when people use the word literally. Now, there are instances in the English language where you would use the word literally, because obviously literally means it definitely happened. But people use the word literally all the time. I literally just went over there and talked to that person. Well, you went over and talked to that person. You don't have to use the word literally. Because literally means you did it. If you're telling me you did it, I believe you did it. Literally is kind of like an extra emphasis on the situation that I really do not understand. I don't know why that word literally pops in there. I think what people are doing is they're using the word literally as more of a time thing. Like, I literally just went over and talked to that person, that I just did it. But that's not what the term literally means. Literally means it happened. It's not figurative. You have literally and figuratively. Figuratively is it didn't really happen, but this is what kind of happened. Literally is it happened just this way. So you would not use literally in normal English. But that's just one of my pet peeves. But there are instances where you can use it. 740-383-9944. Do you have little English pet peeves like that? And I screw them up all the time. I mean, I've used the word literally. I'm not saying I'm perfect at all, because it becomes part of your vernacular being around people. So it certainly does happen. So I do use the term literally. But like aunt and aunt, we've had that one around forever. I think it's actually aunt, but I do say aunt from time to time. I slip up and I'll say aunt, but aunt is the proper way. Progress, process, you know, those, not progress and process. We have those slipping in. I don't know. Those are just my English pet peeves. Does anybody have a pet peeve like that? I know a lot of people say library. Have you ever wondered, and a lot of people have that problem, why library? Is that a speech thing, or is that just they think it's supposed to be pronounced that way instead of library? I don't know. Now, one that's kind of interesting that I'm interested to get your thoughts on, ketchup and catsup. Now, there are products out there on the market, C-A-T-S-U-P. Now, do you call that ketchup, or is that catsup? Or does the C become a K and it's just ketchup as well? I think these are interesting things, if you really want to know. 740-383-9944. Any opinions on Dr. Acton or anything else? Oh, and I just got a literally myself. Isn't that nice? Well, you know, the literally I just got online is technically, I don't know. I guess you could use that. The sentence somebody just sent me online, literally in that particular sentence probably would make sense, because you could have a figurative best friend, bestie, but, I don't know. I don't know if literally would fit in there or not. Probably not, but it could. There might be a few chances where it would. Phone lines are open here this morning, 740-383-9944, having a good time on this Tuesday morning. I've got a lot to talk about here this morning that I need to get into. Thank goodness we have the next hour, because we're already at 10 until the top of the hour here. Well, you know, I guess if you have a lot of besties, if you say you're literally my bestie, then, yeah, I guess you probably could use the word literally there, if there were a lot of them. So, I guess. I don't know. Literally versus figuratively. You notice nobody nobody ever uses the word figuratively. Nobody says, I figuratively just did that. You don't see a lot of that. Now I'm being told, don't correct my English. I don't know. Oh, I think it was a jab to begin with. Listen, I'm an English major. That happens from time to time. You have to correct people's English. Now, you try not to, because it does make some people angry. People don't like their English being corrected. But you do it to try to be helpful, I think. Maybe some people do it to be mean. I do it to try to be helpful. Now, I've got some stories about something that went on last night. And I even teased this morning on Facebook. But with only 9 minutes left, I'm not going to be able to get into it this hour. So you're going to have to tune in next hour. But I had something go on last night. Actually, it went on for several hours, which is not a bad thing. But it's going to be interesting stories, let me tell you, because it's one of those things that had never really happened, I guess, to that degree. And it was just an interesting event, and I'm going to tell you about it next hour, and we're going to go through it. So here we go. Now I'm being told it wasn't a job. You can start correcting it in 2 weeks. And then I can do it for 16 weeks. Well, this will be interesting. It should be an interesting 16 weeks. I don't know. So if it's not my job, I can't correct it. But apparently if I'm being asked, then I can correct it. But stay tuned next hour. There's going to be some interesting stories coming around the curb next hour here on WWGH Radio from a little thing that went on last night. All right. What else is on the agenda here? Oh, I got to tell you this. This is kind of funny. Yesterday, we were talking about drive-ins. And I think Back to the Future is showing at Mansfield this weekend, which is great. Now, that might be something that might actually draw me to the drive-in very quickly. Because I love the movie Back to the Future. It's a great, 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 great movie. I'm not that big a fan of E.T. As a matter of fact, I couldn't even tell you the last time I saw E.T. Oh, it wasn't a jab, not a job. I said job. Oh, I don't know. See, I think it might have been, and she capitalized the word jab to tell me that I was wrong. So now, see, now she's correcting me. It wasn't jab, it was job. Or it wasn't job, it was jab. Okay. Well, she was taking a jab at me. That's what I understand. But we were talking about drive-ins yesterday here on the program. And as I say, this Saturday may be Back to the Future night. That would be a lot of fun. But when the program was over yesterday, and I'm going to tiptoe around this without saying anything, but Jeff Ruth showed up here at the studio yesterday as we were going off the air. And I went, it's always good to see Jeff, but I hadn't seen him since the anniversary party. And I thought, now what is Jeff showing up here for? So Jeff shows up in the studio, and he said he heard me talking about drive-ins yesterday. And he had a drive-in story to tell me. Now, I will tell you this. It's not a story you can tell on the air, so don't ask Jeff about this story. You would never be able to tell it on the air. But it's an interesting look at the inside of drive-ins. And, you know, there are a lot of positive things about drive-ins. I think just like there are a lot of positive things about movie theaters. But there are also some things that are not positive. But they leave you with memories and stories forever and ever. As I say, next hour I'm going to talk about this thing that happened last night. Now, I will tell you one thing I enjoy. Now, here's one thing I enjoy. I do enjoy, whether or not I show up or not, I do like an impromptu get-together. I will say that. If I don't have anything else going on and I can make the time, there's nothing better to me than an impromptu get-together. Because have you ever noticed when you plan something, it never seems to turn out exactly how you plan it? You say, oh, okay, we're going to do this, and we're going to have this big fun, and this is going to be tremendous. And sometimes it does work out that way. And sometimes you have the most tremendous fun. But a lot of times it doesn't work out that way. And I think sometimes when you don't have any expectation, if somebody calls you up, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or texts you or whatever we do now and says, hey, do you want to get together tonight? You have no expectation because, hey, it just got thrown together. So then, whatever fun you end up having is something you didn't expect to have anyway. And there's a low expectation bar. So I think sometimes you leave those situations a lot better than possibly you leave other situations. So this is something I've learned. I've learned that sometimes the impromptu is much better than the planned. Now, the problem with this is that so many people lead such busy lives now, it's hard for them to do that. And it's hard for me to do that to a certain degree, because obviously if I've got something going on, I can't just walk away from it and do something. But it is fun. There's a whole thing about this. And I wonder what the etiquette is on this. It is fun to be invited to something. And I'm not necessarily even talking like parties or anything like that. It's just fun to be invited somewhere. And if you can do it on a very quick basis, like, hey, you know, do you want to come over tonight? Hey, that's fun. and you have no expectation and you end up having a great time. Those end up being the best moments. And I think next hour, that particular story that I'm going to get into, which has several parts, will kind of, well, it's going to start that way. And then we'll get into actually what happened. But it's a little bit of an interesting story. But we've talked about the Jeff Ruth drive-in story here and Back to the Future showing over at Mansfield this weekend. I'm going to save this for next hour, too. Although we did get a, boy, did we get a conversation going yesterday about beer and bratwurst. Beer and bratwurst. Should you boil your bratwurst in beer or bratwurst? See, I think it's pronounced bratwurst. It's a German thing. And I was told by the people in Carly's in Bucyrus, they're saying over there is, eat the bratwurst and drink the beer. Now, I'm inclined to believe that because they've been processing bratwurst or bratwurst in Bucyrus for a long, long time. Bucyrus is Bratwurst City. But so many people get offended by that. They say that beer is the way to go. You've got to boil your bratwurst in beer. It changes the flavor. We had a call yesterday at the end of the program saying so much. I really don't know if it does. To be honest with you, I've had bratwurst boiled in beer, and I really can't tell the difference. Now, I know they sell beer-flavored bratwurst in the store, but that's a flavoring that's put on there. It would seem to me that if you boiled bratwurst in a beer, that most of that would just boil off. It would steam off. I'm not sure why it would stick to the bratwurst. Now, maybe it would. Maybe I just don't eat enough bratwurst in my life. But boy, that when you tell people that the beer has no effect on the bratwurst, they kind of get a little cross with you. They get a little angry. They get a little upset. That's a big thing with people. Beer and bratwurst. Does anybody out there think that the beer bratwurst thing does work or the beer bratwurst thing does not work? Let me know. We have a little bit of time here before the end of the hour. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Do you think that boiling a bratwurst in beer does change the chemical makeup of it? And have you ever had a bratwurst without boiling it in beer to see if there is a change? I think that's what you have to do. You have to make some kind of case study of it. It's all very interesting, if you ask me. I've done it both ways, and to be honest, if there was a difference, it doesn't strike much of a chord in my head, because I think I would pay better attention to it. But who knows? Maybe we'll continue this conversation next hour. Plus, we'll get into what I did last night and why it was interesting. There's a little story involved there, plus some people I want to mention this morning. So come back on this station. Be back in 10 minutes.
In like 120 years or something.
Well, the women that they've come up with wouldn't really make a bill. I mean, the women could.